To see examples of what we talk about on the show, along with links to further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
We're on, dude.
Oh, hey! Welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number 72, and I am your host, Dallas Busha. And today with me we have...
Don?
Dr. Morbius?
Yes, yeah, said it at the same time.
Yeah.
What's up, boys? How you doing?
Good.
Nice. I hope you all had a great Christmas.
Yeah, it was good. I got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, an amazing one. If
I got a bike and a Man from Uncle briefcase and, you know, all sorts of good stuff like that.
I got a rock.
Oh, man.
I really enjoyed the last episode we recorded, and listeners, if you didn't listen to it, it was our Christmas episode where we all exchanged gifts, and we had a hell of a lot of fun, and we got a lot of good comics and graphic novels and just fun stuff, and a lot of good, great Christmas talk along with comic and music talk, and Al went on one of his awesome rantings about the music industry.
Yeah, we're
so it was a lot of fun. So how have you guys been? Anything new? Anything recent that I don't know about?
Oh, gosh, no. It's just the same old, man.
It's never the same, but there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, we're done. Show's over.
It's kind of nice to be back two episodes in a row, too, because I haven't done a show with you guys in a while, and I have to say, you guys are very determined, and it's nice to see you continue the show, even when I can't.
Yeah, and the fact that you came back, because the copyright was going to lapse already into our hands. So now that you're here, you know.
I just showed up to do these two episodes, and then I've got, I think my contract says I have to do three episodes next year, and I'm good.
Yeah, and you're good. Yeah, so it's like,
I get the heck out until
2015. Yeah, these are the copyright shows.
Well, as long as you understand that Al and I are the ones that get the publishing rights.
We get the publishing rights. You get the performance.
Crap.
You get performance.
You get to be in the band, but we get,
to be in the band. Yeah.
Can I still call myself the host?
Yes, you can.
I watched Ellie's Out of Town right now for school, and I've been kind of bored the last couple nights, so I watched The Man of Steel for like the third time the other night by myself, and I had a big carton of ice cream, and I was just munching on it all night watching the movie. I love that movie.
I've never seen it.
Mm. I've heard a lot of negative reviews, and obviously everyone's got an opinion, and... Overall, a lot of people didn't like it for various reasons.
It did well at the box office,
well,
as they say.
You say a lot of negative reviews, but I have never met any one person say they didn't like the movie. Now, I've even read reviews where people said it was a good movie and they liked it, but then what they give is certain things that bother them about the film. I've never heard anybody say they didn't like it, but they brought up things about, you know, Superman was always hope, which they tried to push it on there. But they do talk about certain parts. I guess he wandered the world, you know, for no reason.
Is he a mopey Superman in this one?
Well, I hear that. And I also hear about, you know, that whole battle at the end with him and Zod and how all these people die. I hear criticism about that one. And about some people say it doesn't really seem quite like Superman. He wouldn't do that. But at the same time, my wife just inadvertently went to see it with a friend of hers. They went to see a show that was sold out. She's black. I says, so we went to see Superman. It was good. But I always hear stuff like that. You know?
It was a big, fun, appropriately epic film, I thought. I liked it a lot. And, upon multiple viewings, I like it even more. Not only do I see things that I didn't realize before, but some of the things that were stressed that went right over my head the first time or two, you notice, and it makes the enjoyment and the appreciation of the movie even better. They do kind of push that he is hope, which is a very important thing because he's the eternal Boy Scout. He should be hope for everybody. And so they stress that quite a few times.
Tell us about the story, Dallas. Tell us a little about the story.
Well, you haven't seen it.
Because I may get inspired to watch it. Now, give us a taste.
The intro is great. Probably about the first 20 or 30 minutes is all on Krypton.
Okay.
And spoiler alert for anybody that hasn't seen it. It's been out since the summer, so I'm, you know.
Yeah.
It's great. Russell Crowe plays Kal-El, or Jor-El, okay. Superman's dad. All
right.
And he's fantastic. I like Russell Crowe, and I think he's a good actor. And he does great in this movie. And it starts as this big, sprawling sci-fi epic, you know. It seems like it's going to be a big sci-fi movie, and it's great. And it's a big, there's a lot of great fun battle scenes and spaceship fights and, you know, the kind of the sci-fi stuff you would expect. And then it quickly cuts and it starts to tell Kal-El's story kind of out of sequence, and it's done brilliantly because the majority of it takes place in the present, but there's a lot of flashbacks to his childhood and him growing up and his father, played by
Kevin Costner.
Oh, really?
I didn't see it. His father's played by Kevin Costner, and he's instilling in young Clark his specific sense of morality.
Right.
And the way the story is told is great because by doing this, by kind of knocking it out from the past to the present back and forth, they're able to tell more than you usually could in one single movie, you know? Because there's so much material to cover, and they do it in such a smart, intelligent way that, you know, it never seems like overwhelming.
Nice.
And it's a really fun movie. The villains are very vicious. I mean, Zod's great. He's a real mean bastard. And Fiora is awesome. There's a bunch of kind of callbacks to the old Superman 2, the Richard Donner film.
Oh, yeah.
With Fiora and Zod. And it was a very entertaining film. It was directed by Zack Snyder, so it's a real big budget. You know, explosions. The fight scenes are fantastic. Some of the best fight scenes I've ever seen in a movie up to this point. They really pushed the envelope on this. You know, you would think it's neat seeing Superman fighting Zod and his lackeys, and you always kind of wonder what would that really be like and how big and epic can this battle be. And watching it on film, you're like, holy shit. Like, these guys are just blazing through buildings, and there's one part where Zod and his group are kind of they get to the Kent farmhouse, and they're looking for Clark, and they're surrounding Martha. Diane Lane plays her, Superman's mom.
Wow.
And, you know, they're threatening her, and out of nowhere, here comes Clark flying through the field, just grabs Zod out of nowhere, right before Zod's about to hit his mom, and he's just blasting him through, and they're flying miles and miles, and Superman just punching him in the face, like, don't ever threaten my mother, and they're just blasting through these barns, and it's just huge, and that's what would happen if you had these kind of people around, you know?
Right.
It's amazing. I mean, this movie blew me away. I loved it.
Well, that's one thing. When I was growing up, you'd always read superhero battles, and, it, you know, it was minimal, even no matter how powerful they were. It was in Alan Moore's Marvel Man. You know, when the series was finishing, when he got in a fight with Kid Miracle Man, and basically it just seemed like it devastated most of the planet. And the Justice League animated cartoon, Superman was fighting the dark side. And at the very end, he brought that up. You don't know what it's like to be like me, living in a paper world, trying not to destroy it. And he let loose, and they were showing a little bit of that in the cartoon. So it makes sense that in the film that if these two superpower beings would do it, all this destruction would happen. But
it's great. There's a scene where Zod and Superman are flying towards each other, and right when they hit, they're in the middle of Metropolis, and all the windows and the buildings around them just shatter. And when Superman's flying, and you can tell when he starts going fast, he's hitting multiple sonic booms. It's really neat. It's well done. It's pretty thought out, you know.
You think the superhero movie industry, whatever you want to call it, I'm thinking it probably will have legs for a while. Do you think they're gonna, like, you know, because they keep rebooting Spider-Man, they're rebooting Superman, I'm thinking they're gonna redo the Batman thing again. Do you think at some point it's gonna, you know, kind of like wear thin, or do you think it's just gonna keep going? I think it's gonna keep going because of the people that own the characters.
Well, these are also modern day myths, you know.
Myths,
I mean, they'll always have their own. In some form or another, they're going
to
exist. And for now, I mean, they're huge in movies, and I'm personally surprised that they've been this popular in the movies for as long as they have been. They had a big resurgence in the late 90s, around the time that first X-Men movie came out. And when I say big surge, like that's when they really hit the box office running, you know. And they really haven't slowed down since.
And the technology now is perfect for these movies.
Yeah, movie storytelling and movie making has gotten to that point where they can tell these big epic tales, these unbelievable stories, and make it look as realistic as possible and appropriately big and epic.
Almost better than the comic book sometimes.
No.
Almost.
Yeah,
that's why I worry that people will rather see the movie than read the book.
That's
is what I'm getting
the case.
At.
People are always going to want to see the movie. It's what you and I talked about.
Well, not when we were kids. We'd go see the Batman movie, but we still would want to read the comic book.
Well, absolutely, but
it's apples and oranges.
Well,
I think.
You know, I say that, but that's the same thing. It's like we were talking about French comics one episode in the past, and I just brought up that musical groups most of the world hears. I mean, you know, every once in a while you'll even hear some minor French singers, you know. That,
yeah.
But the music is always out there, whereas the comic books, you may never see comic books from Japan or France or Spain. Once in a while you'll get lucky. Like in the 70s you had heavy metal or something.
Yeah.
But that's the same with movies. No matter what, a book, you know, you may not ever find, but then when they make a movie about it, everybody sees it.
Yeah, you know? That's true too, except we've never seen the Asterix movies here. The ones they make in France with Gerard
right.
Depardieu, so that's because they don't. I guess they figure there's no market here for
right.
them or something like that.
There was a book my daughter had read in elementary school, and she goes, "Dad, you've got to read Holes." So she made me check out the library and read it, and it was actually quite good. And then she made my wife read it. Come to find out, every kid I knew at the karate school and Holly's friends, I said, "Have you ever read Holes?" It was an enthusiastic head up and down. Well, then they made a movie, and my fear was that the movie, that was the one everybody's going to know. They're not going to read this fantastic kids book anymore. They're just going to see the show and think of that. Well, the movie was good, but fortunately that didn't happen. People still, you know, read the book. But in most cases, if a movie comes out,
mm-hmm.
how many times do you always say, "Well, I've seen the movie, I don't need to read it"?
Yeah, it overshadows the popularity of the book, and it becomes the definitive version, which that's not really fair. To the original material.
Well, how many Wizard of Oz? I always think of the movie. I've never read the books, but then when you start hearing people talk about the books, they're much different. I mean, some of it's the same, but you know, I don't know. Superhero movies. It seems to me like they're not going to go away. I thought they just kind of. I don't mind people seeing them. I've seen a couple I did like, but they're not my favorite thing. I don't go out to see them. A lot of times I see them because Dallas says, "Don, you got to see this." He'll lend me the DVD. I mean, and they're fine, but DC's counting on it. They move their offices to Hollywood.
Yep, Warner Bros.
And, I've even read where they're saying you're going to see the mainstream publishers finally just go in the movie business and just license their characters out to other comic companies.
You've heard that? That's interesting.
I've read that, but it's speculation. Don't get me wrong. That's not anything you were saying, but they're saying
I wouldn't be surprised.
We have news here from Don.
No, this is stuff I read on the internet, but they're saying...
Well, everything on the internet is true.
Yeah.
The internet.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, that's the issue was what if they do start licensing out their own comics?
To like IDW or somebody like
that?
Well,
that's happened. You know,
maybe it'll be better.
What was IDW publishing?
Star Trek.
That's generic. They were publishing the Archie stuff. The best of Dan DiCarlo, the best of Sam.
Oh, the hardcovers,
which are awesome, but I never would have thought you'd ever see that. IDW does their own material, but they license out and...
They do those artist edition, those big books of...
It's nice to know Fantagraphics has always kind of been the premier company to do that style, and it's nice to know other companies are picking up that torch.
Yeah.
You know, Fantagraphics is great about... getting these nice, fat, hardcover, deluxe reprints of these old comic strips and these old comic books you might not be able to find anywhere else. You know, they have the great Peanuts run.
Yeah.
You know, they do Popeye, all that stuff.
It's been reprinted before. Yeah. They just pick up the torch and, you know, are doing it now and stuff like that. There used to be other companies that used to do the strips and stuff like that. I remember, what was it, Dragon Lady Press years ago? They used to do the I don't know if you want to call them graphic novels, but they used to do the Buzz Sawyer and all that stuff. Reprints.
Yeah, which I really enjoyed. Now,
and they were reasonably priced, too.
Now Fantagraphics is putting out the whole thing in those big hardcovers.
Yeah.
And even though it's more expensive, it's a lot cheaper than if you would have just found issue after issue of those Dragon Lady Press.
But I used to like those because it was just, I don't know, for some reason I used to like it better that way because it was just like, it wasn't like this big volume that you felt, oh, I got to read all this. It was just like, here's like... 60 or 70 pages of story, go for it, or whatever. I was like, okay, that's cool.
No, I enjoyed those, too. What I didn't enjoy was that I'd find one at one store and never see another one again.
Yes, that's another problem, too. You had to order them specifically.
Yeah, they were hard to track.
Yeah.
I know what you mean about those big, fat editions. They can be really overwhelming when you got a big collection of something.
Yeah.
I like them a lot.
I do, too.
I love collections, but, yeah, sometimes it's hard to just sit down and say, oh, I just want to read, you know, a couple stories out of this thing. You know, it's intimidating to pick it up and open it.
Exactly, yeah, you're going like, oh my god, am I done with this yet? Here we go, you know, another Here's Lucy taking the football away again here. But I do love those strips.
I've talked about this book on the show before, but I have a book called Alex by Eddie Campbell. Yeah. And it's a collection of his autobiographical comics over the years. And it's like probably a good 1,000-page edition. But this is a collection of stuff over the course of like two decades, you know? And this is, it's pretty, you know, dense stuff. So every page is going to take you a while to read, let alone you got 1,000 pages. So it's a very intimidating thing. I've barely scratched the surface on that. I'm like 300 pages in, and I think that's good.
How many pages is it? Like 600 or something?
Probably like 8 or so. It's close to 1,000, I think. It's huge.
Yeah, but that's a nice package, though, that you got. It's a nice size, and
it is.
It's nice work.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, it's something that'll take me years.
I think
years to read.
Don and I talked about this, but we didn't get your point of view. Do you prefer, or do you have a preference over buying individual issues or the graphic novel?
Graphic novels all the way for me, because it's kind of stupid and petty, but I like putting them up on my bookshelf. I like having a nice, good-looking bookshelf with a bunch of big, fat hardcover books. You know, that's one of the reasons I've been binding a lot of my books lately.
Yeah,
I talked about this on.
That was nice. Yeah,
I talked about this on the Facebook page, and I posted a couple pictures. Maybe we can post them on our blog too. But recently, I found a really good binding company called Herring and Robinson, H-E-R-R-I-N-G and Robinson. They're based out in California. Now, there's a ton of book binding companies around all across the states, and you can probably find them in the state you live in. But I happen to like these guys after doing a lot of research, and I've worked with them a couple times now. And I sent them my entire run of Promethea, which is 32 issues. They had it bound into one huge, big hardcover book, and I think the package came out great. They also do custom covers, so I designed the cover of my hardcover Promethea book, sent them a PDF, and it was scanned right on the hardcover, which I think is great. It's not a dust jacket that goes in the hardcover. It's the actual image I made on the hardcover.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. The scene. Now
it's
doing
a one-of-a-kind.
It's a one-of-a-kind. No one else owns one like this.
That's right.
I sent off my New Mutants to be done by them, the first 30 or so issues of Chris Claremont's New Mutants. And then next I'm going to do the first 30 or so issues of Nexus by Mike Baron and Steve Root.
Yeah.
I really like it, though, and I know you're kind of excited about that because you like...
Yeah, I've got some bunch of old books that are laying around. I just wanted to do collections of artists, so I might jump in on that and do like a Wally Wood thing or an Al Williamson thing or stuff like that.
Well, one day I got an email from Dallas saying found out to have a heart attack, but he was sending his Prometheus. He said he was removing the staples.
Yeah.
And sending them in. And I'm thinking, okay, I mean, I didn't mind, but I've heard of this. I've heard of people talking about it. Then Dallas sent me, he designed the cover. And a lot of times you see, well, it looks nice on the internet, you know, when you send the JPEGs, but it can turn out differently when it's printed.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
But yeah, I have to say the big volume he's got, the package is fantastic. The cover couldn't be any better than what it is.
Oh yeah.
And it really reads nicely. What I was concerned about, as Dallas and I have talked about, is in that series J.H. Williams did a lot of 2-page spreads. And I was curious about your gutter loss, but it's actually not bad whatsoever.
It's not bad. Now, the gutter loss is, you know, it's the gutter, the in-between section of 2 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a little bit of gutter loss in here because it's almost inevitable, but it's not that bad.
You can still read the book, and
you can still read the book.
99.5% of the artwork, or 99%.
Right. Yeah.
0.8% of the artwork.
But it's really good, and this company, I've really liked them. They've been so nice with me. They communicate really well. I mean, every time I send them an email, they get right back to me. I've talked to their secretary on the phone, or you know, their office lady on the phone a couple of times, and she's always super nice and helpful. And I really like this company. It's kind of a long process. It takes, you know, a month or two to get everything finished and sent back to you, but it's so worth it. The price is great too. So if anyone's interested in bookbinding, just Google bookbinding and just look into it, you know.
Wow.
No matter who you go through, it's a great hobby. It's a great thing to do. That's it.
Sounds good. Want to do a music thingy?
Yeah, let's jump into some music.
What are we going to play?
Burrata.
All right.
Enjoy.
If I can ever find the stop button.
In a minute.
In a second. We're almost there now. Oh, there you are, you little devil. Yeah.
All right, we're singing a cappella.
Why isn't it
done? Go.
You can find the most recent 20 episodes of the show on iTunes. If you'd like to hear older episodes, go to our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
Hallelujah. And that was Parada. They're a working band in the Philippines. If you're anywhere in the Manila envelope, Manila envelope.
Yeah,
you're inside of a Manila envelope.
Well, get out. We're going to mail
you. If
you're
anywhere in the Manila area, you can find these guys. We'll have a link on the blog, and it has all the tour dates, and I highly recommend seeing them.
Do they play only in Manila, or do they tour outside of the Philippines?
I don't know at this time. I'm sure they will.
Jeez, Al. Way to put them on the spot.
Well, they're a fairly new band.
I would do that.
They're a fairly new band. They're a band I actually really like.
They're a hard rock band, right?
Yeah, hard rock band. But
I like hard rock.
Tight.
All right, good. Sounds good.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, man. So what else we got going on here, man?
I've got nothing.
Are we going to talk about comic books again?
Let's talk comics. What have you guys been reading?
Hey, I want to bring one up.
Come on, there we go.
Come on, Don. What you
really
got?
I was really excited about. It was the Fox.
What did the Fox say?
But, oh, that's really clever. No, the Fox was one of the old MLJ characters. And one of their superheroes, MLJ, eventually became Archie Comics. But I've heard of them. I've seen references to them. But in the 80s, they put them out again as Red Circle. And it was the Shield, the Fly, I can't think of that. But one was the Black Hood and Fox. And the Fox, everybody remembers, because Alex Toth did 2 6- or 8-page backup stories in the Black Hood. And it was just 2 stories, but to me, I just think they were the greatest stories I ever read. And anyway, the artist of this series, Dean Haspel, said he kind of based it off of Alex Toth's stories. He said everybody remembers them, and there was only 2 short stories he did. So anyway, I like Dean Haspel. I've never really read his work. I've just seen him on the internet. And so I was kind of excited. And
I got that. After Life with Archie.
Yeah, we talked about it. You don't listen to the show, do you?
No, I did. That's why I was saying.
Yeah.
Anyway. I was trying to be quiet so Don could talk.
Dallas is pointing at the ads. But I do like the book. I really like the covers.
Yes.
I guess they're all variant covers. And they're not the ones I saw advertised. Darwin Cook had done one. I can't remember who did the one Dallas looking at, but the other one Paul Pope did, but it was based off of an Alex Toth sketch.
Dean Haspel?
No, he's the artist, but on the inside it'll say who the artist was for the cover. It was a female. But I really like the covers quite well. I love the logo, which is the old Alex Toth drawn logo he did.
Well, Fiona Staples.
Yeah, Fiona Staples.
She does, I think she's the girl that does Saga.
Hmm. I've heard her name.
Yeah.
But, anyway, I'm trying to think. Mark Waid did the dialogue. I think Dean Haspel has basically come up with a story and drawn it. Mark Waid is adding the dialogue to it. And
the covers look nice. The interiors, I like some of it, and some of it I'm like a little bit.
I hate to say it because I was really excited about this because the stuff I've seen Dean Haspel do on the internet, this is strong. The covers struck me.
Yeah.
So I was so excited to get it, and I really hate to say, but I am a bit disappointed in it.
I mean, I see Terry Austin in one of the issues, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, the second
actually.
Issue has a Shield story. I can't think who drew it, but Terry Austin inked it.
I love the cover. I know you were just talking about Paul Pope.
Yeah.
He's great. He's got such an awesome style.
But what bothers me the most is the finishes. I wish that you would have used a little thicker ink. So maybe it's because I'm used to Alex Toth.
Oh, God, yeah.
But nevertheless, I'm going to get the other issues. I don't know if he's going to continue on with just a 4 or 6-issue series. And I love the advertisements to it, like that house ad there. They're really strong, you know.
Yeah, the Toth stories that he did were classic back in the day. They were like, what the heck is this? I thought it was a new character. I didn't realize it was an old character.
Yeah, he made it seem like a new character.
He made it seem like a new character, yeah.
I don't know if the guy did before, but in the Toth stories, he's basically a reporter. And basically, it was just a story about, you know, one of the stories is about a guy that created an engine that didn't use fuel. And he offered it to the government during World War II. And basically, it was the petroleum industry was trying to out him. They kept it hidden, and they were shooting him and at him and everything. Well, this, you know, the character of the Fox showed up and talked to him. And then when he found out what the trouble was, he turned into the Fox for like one page, took care of the situation, and then moved on as a civilian.
Yeah.
Both stories were like that. It was something fantastic that happened. It was basically about a guy coming to find out what was happening. And for 1 or 2 pages, to turn into the Fox and then go right back to it, which is actually really neat. And that was, Alex Toth wrote those as well.
Yeah. Yeah, now that we're talking about that, I had like an idea that came to mind. Again, this is your opinions or whatever, and mine. To me, Alex Toth was a genius artist, okay? He was like freaking, you know, he took it to a level that nobody expected, and he was a master at it. You guys think there are any genius artists now? Anybody you would say, wow, this guy is just taking the art form? Or has it become totally writer-based and the artist is now?
There's some amazing artists out there right now. Hell, Paul Pope is one. He's pushing the envelope with his own specific style. I mean, he's great at what he does. And if you've seen a lot of, like, Battle Boy and things like that, awesome.
I've never seen
Paul
Battle
Pope's good.
Boy.
Well,
J.H. Williams is
J.H. Williams third. I mean, the stuff he's doing on Batwoman.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still doing Batwoman.
No, I think he left. I think he left for some reason or another.
He's doing the new Sandman series with Neil Gaiman.
That's out already.
And
yeah.
That looks friggin' great. I mean, J.H. Williams has
such a
firm grasp at the language of comic books. And he's able to use different art styles to kind of convey that, you know.
Yeah, he does. I like it. I like one of his styles more than the other. I like his looser style sometimes better than the real, you know, finished, you know, perfect, pretty, almost Art Nouveau looking style that he uses sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, that was a great, in one of his stories in Detective Comics with Batwoman, he had a really cool style when he was showing the past of Batwoman's younger years when she was young. It was almost like a Johnny Romita kind of style, you know.
Well, all through that series, he kept changing. I mean, in one issue, there could be three changes in it, and it was a narrative. Like, if the character was always the bad person in it, you know, the protagonist, they'd show up, and the style would be different. When she was Batwoman, he did it in one style. Mm-hmm. When he'd have flashbacks of her youth, it'd be another style. And then when she would change, you know, out of the Batwoman outfit, the style changed to more of an Art Nouveau-looking style.
Yeah, yeah, that's it, exactly,
It's amazing, on top of all that, he's got such a strong design sense.
Exactly.
And that just propels him even more, because, like I said, he's got a command over the language of comics, not just the art styles, but the design and the way it's presented, the way he paces and tells the story through his art.
Okay.
I mean, the guy's great. He's one of my favorites. No secret.
I think what your question is, I actually like that quite well. I can't think of anybody off my head. But I think there probably are. It's just we're not seeing them.
I think we're seeing a lot of good people out there now.
I see this. I can't believe the level of art that's out there now. Not that I like all the art styles, but I remember at one point where it just seemed like you had a bunch of tired old men at the end of the 70s. You know, no offense. And then you had some young talent coming out, but the companies were kind of hesitant to let them do anything.
You know what it is, too? The old guys are more dependable than, I think, the younger guys.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I see stuff now that I don't read, but I see it. How in the world are you doing this every month? Which I'm told there's lateness is all over the place.
Yes.
Well, you got your Chris Ware. He's a huge standout, in the medium.
Now, I do like Chris Ware. I like his looks. I don't like his stories. And I've heard other people say this. I just find them kind of depressing and not too much to it, kind of shallow.
Well, just artists and design sense alone, because you brought up artists.
Artists
that are maybe pushing the medium or doing something that no one else is doing. Chris Ware is very unique.
Well, I was reading an interview with a female cartoonist who's much older, and she started talking about Chris Ware and how she loves his work. But she wasn't talking about the story. Well, she was actually talking about the stories, but it was all as a whole. But she was talking about why she loved it and why it was showing, which the aesthetics of it, I think he's incredible. I think he's an incredible designer. I love his stories and what she was talking about, but sometimes he doesn't even have words. He just has things. Again, to me, it's just depressing. It seems like as children, you're full of promise, and when you're an adult, you're just not much. You know,
that does seem to be like the overriding theme in pretty much all of his work. But
which I guess...
Oh, that's Chris Ware's work.
Seth
okay, all right. Yeah.
Who do you think we're talking about?
I just thought you were talking about in general, with the artists in general. At first, they're always hope, and then at the end they become like depressing. We're talking about Chris Ware.
I guess at the same time, when you're young, life
is an energy.
Open boundaries, and you always have dreams of becoming an astronaut or something, and then, you know...
And then you get
beat
down.
Well... You know, you get out of school, and, well, you got to start working. What? Wait a minute. You know?
I like Chris Ware's work, but there's that element of loneliness in it that it's really obvious, which I guess that's his thing, or, you know.
Well, I when I see it, I still pick it up. My daughter fell in love with it. She took one of my books, and I said, look, one thing, don't read this if you're in a down mood, you know. I can't stress to you, if you're in a place you don't want to be at, don't pull this book out to cheer yourself up. And I said, and it might be good if you read it when you're around other people, in case you do feel bad, or bright people, so you can go talk to them.
Yeah.
So.
There was a painter that had that kind of feel, Edward Hopper.
Yes.
The guy who did Nighthawks at the Diner. Even not besides that painting, his paintings had like a sense of, they're really well painted and drawn, and they had a sense of like, solemn, lonely. You know, everybody was kind of isolated, and it was actually kind of interesting. You know, that you could pick up on that, and that just kind of went through his work. So I think Chris Ware kind of touches on that.
In that
a
specific
bit.
Painting of his that you were just talking about, you know, the famous diner one.
Nighthawks at the diner. Yeah.
I think that's mostly perspective, you know, because if you had that same image inside the diner and surrounded by these people,
right.
You wouldn't get that feeling. And
you get it from looking outside.
It's all about the way you convey stuff, just like Chris Ware. It's the way he's conveying his storytelling, his art.
Yeah, he's definitely, but he doesn't put out a regular book, does he? He just does like those hard covers every once in a while.
You know, when you asked about artists, I can think, like Don said, there's tons of exceptional artists.
There are.
But I can't think of many that are such big standouts that they're pushing the medium. One of the last greats I consider a great from the Bronze Age would be, you know, Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah.
He really did
definitely,
some stuff,
yeah.
You know?
Well, see, with Bill Sienkiewicz, it seemed to me like he was pushing further and further.
Yes.
And when he did that with Frank Miller, that Electra
Assassin, yeah.
That, to me, was incredible. And then he did a Daredevil graphic novel with Frank Miller, and then he did Stray Toasters, which I really enjoyed. You know, it was a 4-issue series from Epic. And it was really neat. It was just getting further and further, and then he just kind of disappeared.
You know, Sienkiewicz and Dave McKean, kind of around the same time, were pushing mixed media art in comic books. And this was pre-digital age. And I think a lot of that just kind of fell... Well, I don't want to say flat, that's the wrong word, but it kind of just fell off the grid when the digital age kind of surfaced.
Mm-hmm.
Because not many people were interested in, you know, working hands-on and using all this mixed-media stuff when they could just jump on a computer.
Yeah, why do pay stuff when you can actually do all the stuff on the computer? You know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's it's a problem, but it's also like a step in another direction, too, you know.
Well, Bill Sienkiewicz came back on a Daredevil End of Days series.
That was pretty nice.
I like that, but I see work he does. He's got the chops, but I guess he's just doing another area. It's not so much your comics.
Yeah, and speaking of Chris Ware, I saw like he did. I saw like a New York Times or what was it? It was the New Yorker magazine. He did a cover for them, so I guess
he's doing a lot of those.
He does a lot of them. Okay,
he's earned a lot of recognition through his art, you know. So he's a pretty big artist these days. So I'm not surprised he's on the New Yorker.
Yeah, he's on the cover, and I was like, wow, that's pretty big.
Well, Art Spiegelman's wife is the art director.
Francois Mouly. She's the art director on the New Yorker?
She became that in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
That's why you started seeing Art Spiegelman and some of these guys do covers, which...
That's cool.
Isn't that cool?
There was a woman that worked at the company we're at that she subscribed to it, and every once in a while, she brought me in to... two Art Spiegelman covers, because she knew I knew who he was, and I really enjoyed it. And then I started reading about, you know, she was the art director, and that's why you started to see these guys come in.
I didn't know that.
He wasn't the only one. There was a bunch of them. I think Dan Clowes did some
covers.
He
did, huh?
Nice.
I think. But then I've heard criticism from the old guard talking about it's kind of cheapened it. You're bringing these comic book guys in. They're not the great illustrators that the New Yorker was known for. Well, I guess I'd say it is more of a contemporary thing, but it's one I enjoy quite a bit.
They're great illustrators in their own right.
Yeah, and those Chris Ware covers, there's a bunch. If you look them up on the internet, those New Yorkers covers comes up, and there's something else. You know?
Well, I mean, even the great illustrators at some point were contemporary.
Yes. Well, it's a different time. You know, I mean, you could sit there and talk about how old rock bands, the musicians were old, you know, they were virtuosos and could play anything. And I know in the 90s, there was a resurgence in guitar music, but I also heard the complaint that those guys just knew 3 or 4 chords, you know, and they just kind of, you know, it's like, you know, do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, like the Velvet Underground as opposed to like, you know, King Crimson or something like
exactly.
that. You know, but I kind of like some of the artists that you wouldn't consider virtuosos, you know, guys that do simpler work, that do maybe a little more cartoony work. Because it's a change of pace, you know? I mean, it's not like a guy who just spent 12 years mastering the Japanese brush and can do like a beautiful thick and thin on everything, which is great in its own right. But you got people now doing mainstream comics that have maybe like, you know, sketchier styles or different kind of like, ways of perceiving these characters, and it kind of makes it fresh.
Yeah,
interesting.
Mainstream publishers these days, yeah, specifically Marvel and DC, I've never seen such a broad variety of art styles in their big superhero comics as I do these days.
Yes.
You know, look, Chris Somney, man. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris Somney's
great. You wouldn't expect to see him 10, 15, 20 years ago in Marvel Comics.
You remember that animation company, what was it, UPA?
UPA, yeah.
Yeah. See, UPA was, they came out, Art Babbitt was one of those guys. Art Babbitt was one of the Disney animators. He was incredible. And then when they had the Disney strike, you know, a bunch of them left, and Art Babbitt went and founded with some other people the UPA. What was that stand for? The United Paramount Animation? Anyway, They were doing what they call limited animation. The reason why they were doing that was they were experimenting, trying to find new forms. That they did that on a cartoon, Gerald McBoing Boing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And, it was basically based off of a Dr. Seuss story. And Mr. Bagoo came out of UPA. And there was a bunch of characters, but it was a really unique graphic look. And I was reading an interview with Art Babbitt in the Comic Journal, and that's when he brought up the limited animation, which became prevalent as we grew up. And he said, well, the difference was they were spending all their time trying to figure out how to strip it down and you know, make it graphic. But a lot of the other TV animators just did it as a cheap way of doing it and kind of destroyed what it looked like. But I did like some of those. I like all the diversity that they have now in comics. And you mentioned Chris Somney. I loved them.
Thor the Mighty Avenger?
Yeah, well, I don't care for mainstream comics so much anymore. Once in a while, there'll be an artist I like. I pick up an issue or two he does. But I'm kind of shocked at... I think I'm getting 4 titles from Marvel a month.
You're getting Wolverine, I know that much.
Well, I like Alan Davis, really? So I've been getting those.
But you're getting Wolverine.
That series he's got. I have to say, Paul Cornell, I think, wrote them. They're good, but... And like I said, I like Alan Davis, but the ones I really enjoy is...
Hawkeye.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
It's Matt Fraction and David Aja.
Hawkeye.
Yeah, they did. And they also did Iron Fist.
Yes, a few years ago,
I think.
Yeah.
But they look different than the Iron Fist issues he did.
Yes.
But they're neat, and I picked one up because I just like the covers, and I thought it was one of those where the cover's neat and the interior is somebody else, but it's all him. But he's got a really strong graphic style and then a good illustrator style inside it. But what was it? The guy, Dan Pritchard, you know, Slice Radio, was telling me he reads it, but he says he's getting a little tired of it. The stories are slow-paced. The latest issue I picked up, it's about the female Hawkeye went out west, and they get a different artist drawn. It's a woman, and they said all the stories about her is going to be drawn by this lady, but it's still kind of
cool.
Yeah. I'm also getting the Chris Domney Daredevil stuff, who did Thor the Mighty Avenger and a Rocketeer story before. Yeah. I like quite well. And I'm also getting FF by Mark Allred.
Yeah, that's a great book. That's very fun, and I love Mike Allred's style.
Well, the thing about Mike Allred, again, Matt Fraction was writing those stories. I thought it was a Fantastic Four. Come to find out, Matt Fraction was writing Fantastic Four and this story called FF. Basically, what the synopsis was, the Fantastic Four were going... I don't know where they were going. They were
to leaving. Another dimension fighting baddies.
They were leaving to take care of something, and they put together a four-person team to replace them, but they said they'd only be gone for a minute, and he said it'll be like a year for them or something, but it'll just be a minute for you guys, but in case something happens, they have to have a Fantastic Four there. So it was She-Hulk, Medusa, some pop singer wearing a thing suit, and Scott Lang, which is the new Ant-Man from the end of the 70s, but I thought, okay, and Mike Allred draws it, I liked it, but what was weird was Matt Fraction has left Marvel. He's left all those series he was doing. And Lee Allred, which is one of Mike Allred's kids, took over the writing. and they said that the person, they were going over Matt Frash's notes. His name's on it, he's still involved, but I guess he had story notes. But I have to admit, this last issue is the first one that the All Red Kid wrote. I really like it. It's funny. I mean, the story's progressing, it's going along with it. But there was a couple parts where I laughed out loud.
No, that's good.
And I thought, well, this is actually a little better. So, we'll see.
Well, that's quite a few guys that we've talked about. I would put Darwin Cook in one of the...
Darwin Cook is very influential, I think, in the past decade or so. He'd probably be up there.
Well, I like him really well.
Now, to me, Darwin Cook is like almost an extension of Ty Templeton, what he was doing, Mike Parabek or whatever, you know, the animation style. Parabek passed away, I think.
A long time ago.
Yeah, he was really good. I think he's an extension, but he's taking it to a different, a more sophisticated, maybe, if possible.
But see, I guess I'd relate those. Darwin Cook is somebody that I collect. If I see his name, except for before Marchman, I'll go by.
Yeah.
But I don't really see him as pushing it. I just see him as making really good stories.
In a sense, I see him as pushing it in the sense that he's taken like an old style, an old animation style, not an old animation style, but a more cartoony style, and taken it to a real sophisticated level.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Toth did that in a way. You know, he took kind of like a... He basically stripped it down, say something like, which was really detailed or really, you know, overdrawn, and just simplified it a little bit and took it to a more sophisticated level artistically. You know, I mean, I like Bravo for Adventure a lot. That was a very bizarre strip or whatever, but I do like the stuff that Darwin Cook does, and you know, I think I'm going to enjoy that book, that ego book.
Oh, you will enjoy it. I gave it to you. Of course you're going to enjoy it.
I have to enjoy it.
Well, you know, you're talking about it. I would put the Hernandez brothers in it.
Even they've been around for a while, but yeah, they definitely.
Well, especially when they first started, their work was unique, and every time I see it, wow, look at that. It was something I hadn't seen before, and they're still great, and when I still buy them, as soon as something comes out, I grab it. But I guess I was looking at, you know, they pushed it in before, and they just continue on with good work.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I mean, you know, if there's any listeners out there that want to, like, you know, tell us about what their opinions are, I'm sure you can write to us in our Facebook page and, you know, comment on the iTunes page and stuff like that, so we can have something to read besides spam. And anything else, Mr. Dallas?
No, not that I can think of.
All right, man. Well, you know. Should we call it a day?
I think so.
We're going to stop, but I've got to know.
You need to
and
know.
I'm a little mad, and I'm getting ready to punch Dallas.
Oh, crap.
Oh, my God, Dallas. I can't
stop
him. Oh,
yeah. Okay, let me talk about this. So Don gave me a book that he's been raving about, and I'm sure he's talked about on the show before.
Oh, yeah.
It's a book series called The Valerian.
No, Valerian.
Just Valerian, which is the title character of the book.
And Valerian and is that Valerian and
it's the French it's a French book from the late 60s to 70s.
No? Lorelei, yeah. Valerian,
well, in this I gave Dallas one of the old books from the 80s, and it's just Valerian, but it is Valerian and Lorelei.
Which is funny because this book's called Valerian, but this specific one, it's called Ambassador of the Shadows, in Volume 6. It's all about his girlfriend, woman, sidekick, Lorelei, and it's a sci-fi book, and. I couldn't help but draw a lot of parallels to Mobius.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because that's one of the only other science fiction French artists that I've seen. But this book, it's great. And it predates and it also informs a lot of the science fiction from the late 70s and 80s, most notably Star Wars. You know, you can tell George Lucas was inspired by this and similar stories. And... one of the things I noticed about it, and which I like, and it reminded me of The Inkle, is it's very fast-paced. It's a science fiction kind of journey. This girl, Lorelei, is trying to find her man, Valerian, and an ambassador who's been kidnapped. And she's constantly going from place to place, meeting new aliens, new creatures, there's new adventures, and it's just... always moving forward. It's very fun, and it's just full of big ideas and just great great storytelling. And the art's really fun. Initially, looking at the art when I was thumbing through the book, I didn't think I was going to like the art. It looked a little sketchy to me, and obviously there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not my style. Once I started reading it, the first thing I noticed is how well it complements the story and the writing, mm-hmm. but then how good the art actually is. It's very inventive. It reminded me, and this is probably unfair of me to say, but it reminded me of some of Dave Cockrum's sci-fi style art.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
No, it does. That's one reason I like it, but this came out before Dave.
Right.
But I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, this particular story, Volume 6, was 1975, I think it said.
Yeah. Which I just find astounding that that work was coming out that early. But in the back, it has, different American cartoonists and what they say about it. Walt Simonson was one of them. But J.C. Mazieres, the artist of the series, was a huge influence over Walt Simonson and his style. It's like Walt
I could tell. You could tell him
Walt
that.
Simonson, to me, was always a cross between different artists, but a lot of it was Jack Kirby, and a lot of it was J.C. Mazieres.
There's a lot of Simonson in these books, yeah.
Yeah, but I just absolutely love these. The newer ones that are coming out, they're still the newer reprints of it. It's in English, and I just find astounding.
Is he still alive?
Yes.
Does he still do?
Yeah.
Wow.
But thanks for letting me finally read one of these, and they are entertaining as hell, man. I really liked it.
All right.
I've got to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was a quick read, too. Like I said, since it keeps moving forward, it was a page-turner. I read it in one sitting.
Once you start reading, you can't stop. And these are some of my very favorite comics. When I first saw this cover back in 82, I thought the guy was ripping off Wally Wood. I saw a lot of Wally Wood in it. And, of course, when I read the stories, I see some maybe, but it's a different animal altogether.
Yeah.
He's, to me, just one of the greatest. And I'm so thankful they're coming out. Buy the books so they don't stop.
Yeah, keep buying them. They're also available on Amazon. The first seven are on Amazon, I saw.
Yeah, and pretty soon Amazon will be, you can buy them from Amazon and they'll be sending drones. They'll be coming in drones.
Is that for real or is that just a joke?
I think that the guy actually said it on 60 Minutes, but I'll bet you a soda it's not going to happen. But it would be an interesting concept. You'd be out and a drone just drops like a Valerian bullet.
That would be
your
fun
head
skeet
or
shooting.
You know, yeah.
Oh, I just got a new Xbox.
I got new drone there. Oh, no, it's got my Valerian book. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I read that and I thought, I just don't see this happening.
Well, Don, welcome to the future. We'll have flying cars soon and
at least you're trying to
stuff.
Push these big ideas and it's within our reach, I mean.
Yeah.
Who knows how it'll pan out, but it's.
And what's going to happen when the robots start inventing other robots?
It's mind-boggling thinking of how, technologically advanced we are.
Yeah, in some ways.
Yeah, not
all
me,
right,
I'm
man.
Just stupid. Thank you everyone so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. And I had a blast. It was fun. It's always
fun. It was
a
lot of fun.
Comics.
It's been a while. Mm-hmm.
And now that my contract is done, I'll be here in another 6 months.
All right.
Thank you
very
much.
Copyright has been held for the year. So.
We'll see you all next time. And until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's web comic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.